Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com. Thought for the day, labor long in his sight. Hello, Crusaders, and welcome to episode 83 of the Grim Dark Podcast. This is James.
And this is Mike.
If you're joining us for the first time, we're a podcast devoted to role-playing in the 41st millennium, using the games created by Fantasy Flight Games, or whoever will do 40k stuff in the future, we'll see. But before we get into today's show, let's just have a quick talk about what we've been up to. It's been a good long while since we last did a show, has it not? Like, probably a good 2 months at this point in time.
Has it been that long?
It's been nearly 2 months, yeah, now. It's a number of factors. One of it's been that I've had a killer amount of travel. I pretty much spent all of April travelling for work.
Yeah.
So I came back from the US and I had pretty much the whole month travelling. And then you've had a lot of shifts recently for your work as well. And I went travelling again to the US.
Yeah.
So it's just not worked out well. And we actually had a day planned for a podcast.
Yes.
And then suddenly the rest of our group could play that day. So we're like, okay, let's, you know, delay the podcast, we want to play instead, you know, and then the group ended up pulling out last minute, so we didn't play the game, we didn't podcast, it was
a complete write-off.
Yeah. And actually, I've got to admit too, much to my own chagrin, that just recently, right before I flew to the US last time, I had a game booked for a Friday night that I completely forgot about. Like, I completely forgot I was running this game, and so I'm at work, working late, and I get a SMS from one of the players saying, you know, are you having dinner with us or getting dinner on the way? I'm like, oh, crap, I forgot that game, and like, even if I left work now, I'd be like 2 hours late to the start of the game, and I don't have any of the books with me, so yeah, and I just completely screwed that one up. So, and what's worse is it was one of the players' birthdays as well.
A birthday game, and you missed it.
I know, I'm terrible. So they board gamed instead, anyway. But yeah, so look, I mean, let's do a bit of a quick reality check, you know, because we've had a couple of delays so far this year, and I do plan to keep running the show at least for episode 100.
Yep.
You know, so yeah, we've got no sign yet of what's happening with the 40k gaming license, other than what we've seen with Cubicle 7 for the fantasy license.
Yep.
But you know, I think that if we can just sort of get some material to cover it through to episode 100 at least, and make a decision from there, that's probably a decent start. That'll get us through the rest of this year, at the very minimum anyway. But also, I've decided to change up a few things about the shows, just because of what we're focusing on with the systems right now. And for example, this is a Death Watch show. One of the things I'd originally promised was that we were going to do this Death Watch narrative, you know, this sort of almost choose-your-own-adventure where we'd create a narrative. We had the characters voted for, we picked the four top characters, and this is going to be the first part. And I thought, look, at the rate we're getting shows out, you know, if you have to wait, you know, 6 months for the next part of a 15-minute story segment as such, it's going to quickly lose a lot of interest. So I'm going to change up. We're not going to do the first part of that story narrative. I think what I probably will do to make it up is I've actually created the four winning characters as PCs in the game.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking I might put together some function where I might offer some listeners some online gaming, you know. Okay. So I've been pretty bad with organizing my regular online games like Star Wars and even our Dark Heresy game, just because of the time. But one-off games, like one-shot games, for fans would be a relatively easy thing to organize, because there's not a whole group you're trying to constantly, you know, reorganize after each session as such. So anyway, first, stand by, you know, I'll get some information together for that, but I would like to run some Death Watch session using those characters that the listeners voted for anyway. So that makes sense.
Yep, makes okay. sense. But it's not exactly what I had planned, and I'll tell you about that when we get to the section.
Okay, no worries, okay. All right. So, okay, well, let me talk about, first off, what's been our gaming over the past 2 months? We've been doing our Dungeons & Dragons game still.
Yeah.
So we're like a level 11 now, you know, in the old 3rd ed D&D. It's funny, actually, because I've been using some old 3rd ed resource websites, like Brilliant Gameologist, to get advice on character builds, that sort of stuff, but a lot of those sites are actually falling down now. No one's maintained them in a post Third Ed world. So I went, you know, we started that game the other day, and I went to go and quickly look up some stuff, you know, some spells to use from that site, and found the site was down, 404 error. And thankfully, some other people have managed to archive the material, but still it's, you know, it sucks when the material for the stuff you want it to is going out of print. I've been doing my Scion game still, so I've actually got another session of that this weekend to run, so that's always, you know, Zaynus ensues, and in fact, that game is probably going to lead into one of the conversations I want to have in today's show.
Yep.
We've been running Mutant Chronicles now. So actually, I'm going to have to edit this in after the show, but I want to show the listeners something that I've been working on. So Mike, you played one session of Mutant Chronicles.
Yes.
And the opening of the first book in this series of games I'm running has the characters all working for the Lunar PD. They're all police officers.
Yep.
And one of the constants throughout the this opening section is that the group always gets the same radio dispatcher. So I decided to actually have our friend Lee record a whole bunch of radio dispatch messages for me, like specifically the call-outs that are required in the book, but also just a bunch of basic radio chatter, you know, so standby, Wilco, all this sort of stuff, so I could try and build a dispatcher soundboard for the game. So let me just quickly, I'm going to edit in here, but let me just show you guys an example of one of the recordings I did for that game.
All units, shooting in progress at Enigma Plaza. Officers down, repeat, officers down. All available units, please respond immediately.
So Mike, do you think that that's actually effective in the game? I mean, you've played one session with it, did you like that or not?
Yeah, I found it useful, certainly, yeah.
I mean, certainly, I mean, one of the things I found funny was that I got Lee to record a default message, which was they say that there's no backup available. You know, you have to proceed at your own discretion. You know, no units in your area. So as soon as the group found that out, then every single call out, they say, "Oh, we need backup." just so they can get the no backup available announcement played, or they ask further information. Like, I've got a no further information available one as well.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a standard request. We're playing cops. Of course, you want backup every time you do anything, exactly, because right. Players are lazy. I mean, let's be honest.
That's it. I mean, I should probably, next time I catch up with Lee, I should make her record like a different response, like, you know, oh yeah, all units are on your way now, just to surprise the group and ask for backup next time. So
yeah, but only play that one when they ask for backup for something really mundane.
Yeah, that's it. So anyway, yeah, that's been an interesting game. It's very 40k-esque, I think, the setting as well. The players have described it so far as being halfway between Cyberpunk and 40k.
yeah.
So,
yeah, yeah, it is very, very close setting.
Yeah, it is.
Style, at any rate.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, and it's not really role-playing, but I wanted to call to attention the fact that in the time since our last episode, I've been doing a lot of Shadow War Armageddon. And it's so much so that it's going to be our review today is about Shadow War Armageddon. Because I think it's a great little system.
Yep.
Very reminiscent of the old Necromunda. And so,
by reminiscent, you mean a direct rip-off of?
Pretty much, yes. Yeah. But I mean, I worked out, so I had enough figures to build 8 starting gangs in it as such, from eight different factions, yeah. So I've actually been experimenting with my son, just trying them out, just sort of getting a feel for the various factions as well, so.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about it in the review anyway. Okay, so it is a Deathwatch episode today. We'll do a short news section, then we're going to do my first discussion. We'll talk about Death Watch stuff there. I want to sort of run something by you. And in fact, that discussion's also going to almost take the place of my plot hooks and war gear section too. I'll explain a bit closer when we get to that part of the show.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the Storm Wardens today. That's a faction from the books we haven't covered off yet. We'll do a review of Shadow War Armageddon. And I want to talk to you about systemless gaming. So it's a topic that came up recently in some other conversations I've been having, and I wanted to have a quick chat about it on the show.
Yeah.
Then we'll do a regular community section and close out the show. So thank you all for your patience about waiting for the show to come out. Hope you enjoy the show ahead, but let's get into it anyway.
Command acknowledged. Accessing Imperial Archives.
Okay, so onto the news, and it's actually old news now by the time we're recording this, but it was new news at one point between the last show and this, is that we have now seen an official announcement from Cubicle 7 that they hold the license and are doing a new version of the Warhammer Fantasy RPG.
Yes.
So no mention of 40K in that particular announcement, but, you know, it's good to see that something's being done with the license. What looks interesting, though, is that it looks as though they plan to do 2 separate games, one being classic fantasy, Warhammer fantasy, and one being Age of Sigmar.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know a lot of people were worried that they were going to only offer Age of Sigmar, because some people don't seem to... Like, I mean, I haven't read enough of Age of Sigmar to really know much about it, but I know there are a lot of people out there who are really dedicated to the old Warhammer Fantasy style. And
I don't mind the new Age of Sigmar stuff. I'd say it's very reminiscent of Planescape Warhammer.
Okay, nice. Well, I mean, the most important question, if you want to run a fantasy game in Age of Sigmar, is there still a place for a rat catcher with a small, vicious dog?
I don't know.
That was always the best class from the
rat catcher.
Rat catcher, yeah.
No.
The small but vicious dogs.
No. It was the labourer with the packed lunch.
It's a one use item, eh?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't have to be one use.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe they have it. Maybe it's a special. They get a packed lunch every day.
Yes. Well, they are a labourer.
Exactly right. Yeah, so anyway, we'll keep an eye on that. I have reached out to Cubicle 7 to have a chat, but I haven't heard anything back from the team over there yet, so we'll see how it goes. They might be working hard on getting this out ready for Gen Con, perhaps. I'm not sure, but we'll wait and see. Yeah, they are UK-based, though, so I don't know if they even go to Gen Con, I'm not sure, but we'll see. All right, so Games Workshop, of course, the big news is the launch of 8th edition.
Yep. Dark Imperium is upon us.
That's it, yep. So we went out to our local Games Workshop store in the morning of the release, and I was really hoping there'd be some sort of release day event. Like last, when they released 7th edition, there was a big event at the store. They had raffles, they had these people. No, it was like a regular day at the store this time, you know. And
yeah, I think that's part and parcel of... Here in Australia now, all the stores are run by a single person.
Yeah.
Who works 5 days a week, so they're closed on Mondays and Tuesdays which is obscene.
Yeah, I was actually... I screwed up this week because I had to go to the shops earlier this week, and I took my son to the shops, and I thought, I'll go to Games Workshop, and I completely forgot it was a Tuesday. And then when I'm sort of in the shopping centre thinking, oh, no, they'll be closed, and I'm thinking, oh, but it's now school vacation here in Australia at the moment. You know, maybe they'll be open longer hours for school vacation. No.
No.
No, the door was closed, lights were off. Yeah. The guy at the store was obviously enjoying a well-earned break, so... But I did get back to a Games Workshop store later in the week, because I just wanted to get some paints. But, so I was surprised it wasn't a bigger event. But we went down there, and I picked up my Dark Imperium and three of the codexes, and I think you got something similar. You got paints as well.
Yeah, I got a bunch of paints to replace some, which are just knackered.
Yeah. So I also, because literally it came out the day before I travelled to the US... so I didn't want to carry the stuff with me on the plane. So what I did do is I was most interested in reading Xenos Book 1 because I'm looking at doing Eldar for 8th edition. So I actually bought the... So was that a derisive poof there, Mike?
Yes. Those disgusting pointy ears have no place in a pure and clean human galaxy.
I thought you were a Chaos player.
They're still humans. Still better than Eldar.
I don't know if I call them pure and clean, though, especially not since you're playing Plague Marines.
They're still purer and cleaner than Eldar.
Okay. But anyway, so what I did was I actually bought one of the digital enhanced editions of the Codex from the Games Workshop website as well, so I could read that on planes while I was travelling. And that's quite good, actually, the way that everything in it is hyperlinked. And so if you bring up your army's stat card, you can just tap on any of the weapons or the abilities and it gives you a pop-up of what it actually does. So.
Yeah, I saw recently that they've released the first set of FAQs and they were saying that they'll all be linked to the new codexes as well, so backdate it and fix it up.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I've come across a few things that I wish were in the FAQ that weren't, but what's got me the most annoyed now is that I've been slowly going through working out, converting all the miniatures I have to work out what they count as an army in 8th edition.
Yeah.
And I've gotten stuck with my Astra Militarum because I've got three infantry squads. So originally that was, in 7th or 6th edition, you had to have your command group had to include an infantry squad. It was actually like a command squad and an infantry squad and a heavy weapon squad, all as one HQ selection. Plus then you needed your two separate infantry squads as well.
Yeah.
So I had three infantry squads and...
Yeah, I remember because it meant that Imperial Guard usually had more bodies on the field than my Tyranids.
Yeah, it also meant if you bought the Imperial Guard starter box from 7th edition, it wasn't enough to fill it out because it was only one HQ choice, that was it. Yeah, and plus one elite because it came with a Sentinel Walker, that was it. Anyway, so I've got three squads of soldiers from Imperial Guard. But the problem is that when they came out, like, so I got the box, the starter box plus one more squad. they came set up for two special weapons, usually one flamer, one grenade launcher. So all my squad are set up with one flamer, one grenade launcher, and then a sergeant plus seven regular guys.
Yeah.
You can't do that anymore. An infantry squad's allowed one special weapon for 10 guys. So, you know, the best I can do really is two squads, because I've got to take, if I'm playing WYSIWYG, that is, and I'm OCD, so I will. You know, I have to work out. It's always my hardest conundrum when I'm building miniatures is, what special weapon do I give this squad? You know, I don't know what's going to be the most versatile or best mix, but yeah, so I haven't, it's the one group I haven't worked out yet, my conversion is, but I've got enough to, I can get about 1,000 points of Eldar, Chaos Space Marines, Inquisition, Sisters of Battle, Grey Knights, Astra Militarum, I'll get more of Astra Militarum actually, Death Guard, Death Watch, Harlequins, and then I've got about 4,000 points of Ultramarines. So,
okay, yeah.
I'm a long way away from having anywhere near enough Eldar to beat up my Ultramarine army in terms of size. But, yeah, we're going through doing some painting too. But, what about you, Mike? How are you finding 8th edition so far?
Good. I mean, I've had a little bit of a play around with it, a little bit of a go. It seems well, better balanced than 7th edition. I'm not going to say it's perfectly balanced yet until some codexes start coming out.
Yeah.
And until I get some more games under my belt. But it's nice now that a lot of units that I used to field for flavour actually can do something and have effect on the game. Like, my gaunts are actually worthwhile taking.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say they're as good as any other unit that I have, you know. But
I mean, look, I've got to admit that when I buy miniatures, I rarely buy miniatures thinking this is what my army needs, is this. I buy miniatures that I want to build or I want to do,
and yeah, such. Yeah, so you want to build and you want to paint.
That's it, yeah. So what I'll field usually is a combination of what I've actually got. There's never any sort of tactical sense to it as such. But, yeah, but look, I mean, what we should do, so we're going to review Shadowrun again today, but yeah. I think that we need to get a game of 40K before our next show so we can review 8th edition in our next show, unless miraculously some RPG books come out, but that seems unlikely at the moment, unless we go another 2 to 5 months between shows. But
yeah,
so let's talk about that in the next episode.
Okay, sounds good.
In terms of computer game news, not much really. I loaded up Inquisitor Martyr
again. Yeah, they've done a bunch of new updates for that.
Still shit though, to be still unimpressed by it, I gotta admit. I tried out a melee class and it was a joke. I just kept, you know, like I think I maybe got,
you got swarmed by things,
just got swarmed or shot at my stuff constantly, and you just die, you lose all your lives pretty quickly, even on the easiest level. So, you know, actually, speaking about computer game, this is a complete side note, but so I am not a fan of fighting games, you know. So like,
what you mean, like Street Fighter?
Yeah, okay. Mortal Kombat, that sort of stuff, you know, because they don't have much depth and it's just...
Because I was going to say, you know, if you're not a fan of fighting games, that doesn't leave a lot of computer games left. What, Tetris?
Yeah, Call of Farmville. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, what I mean is, so those side-scrolling fight games like Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat, that sort of stuff, you know, I have a few of them.
But you are a fan of Double Dragon, right? Everyone's a fan of Double Dragon.
Right, yeah. Anyway, some of our listeners wondering what Double Dragon is.
Yeah.
Google it. Anyway,
be astounded by the 16-bit brilliance.
8-bit. Yeah. So recently, I just in a fit of absolute sort of unlike meanness, I picked up the new Injustice game. So are you familiar with Injustice, Mike? Are you, or
not really?
Okay, it's a sort of alternate universe DC universe.
So is the Batman, Superman?
Yeah, it's it. Yeah, but it's a bit darker than you know, not like DC needed a lot more darkness, but you know, but Superman's a much more questionable hero as such, you know. So, in fact, at the start of the game, he's very much like, the best way to stop crime is to murder all criminals, and that will stop crime. But anyway, so I picked this game up because I thought my son, who loves superheroes right now, might enjoy watching it. But I've really gotten into it. Yeah, you know, I'm actually, you know, because it's not just like fight this person and fight this person. It's almost like an interactive movie. It's like you watch a movie for a bit and then you've just got to fight someone so you can get on the next bit of the movie.
Okay.
And it's actually been quite good. So it's completely not 40K related, but it's actually a game I've been giving a bit of time to recently because of this this whole thing. And the other thing I did was recently, I kickstarted the Pathfinder Kingmaker computer game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been thinking for like, I haven't played a lot of Pathfinder. I played some Pathfinder Society at conventions, But I've been...
But only when there was no other session of anything you wanted to play?
No, look, I like them in campaigns. So, you know, sometimes I have, you know, specifically gone after it as such, you know. Anyway, Pathfinder has these, what they call adventure paths, which are basically like six booklets that form together to form a low-level to high-level adventure. And I don't know, there's eight or ten of them out these days. But one of the more popular ones is one called Kingmaker, which is like the third or fourth adventure path. And what Kingmaker stands out as being is apparently it takes place over a long period of time, so it's got lots of flash forwards. But the characters in the game go from being peasants to basically being kings of their own nations as well, and dealing with the threats against their own nations. Some people have kickstarted this as a project to build a computer game out of. So I thought, you know, I like, you know, those sort of CRPG games and D&D, which I like. I like the source, the theme of the game as well. So I kickstarted that. So I'm looking forward to see what happens with that. Because the last game I kickstarted was BattleTech, and so far I've not been overly excited by playing the backer beta of that. Maybe it'd be better when there's a storyline behind it. It's not just, you know, skirmish fights, but we'll see.
Yeah, I've always been a bit leery of kickstarting computer games.
Yeah, yeah. Look. I mean, to be honest, it was the success of the Shadowrun games that's really won it for me. Like, they were just such great games. I didn't kickstart either of them, but, you know, I got into them after they came out, and I was so impressed by what they were able to produce. Harebrained Schemes, actually, who's done BattleTech as well. It's actually Jordan Weissman's involved in that, so he was the guy behind BattleTech and Shadowrun. So
okay,
yeah, you know, maybe. I mean, to be honest, I only got my hands on Shadowrun after it actually came out, so I'll just see what BattleTech's like after it actually comes out, after it's passed back a beta.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Kickstarter does take a bit of my money, as does Patreon now. I'm probably got about $60 a month going out to various Patreon accounts as well. So I'm a supporter. Like, what can I do? You know, I'm an enabler.
Yes. Okay, fair enough.
All right, let's keep going.
Knowledge is power. Hide it well.
All right, so on to our discussion. And this is the point where I originally planned to do the first part of our narrative, and I was chatting with Mike in the break there as well, and Mike was saying that we should still try to do this narrative at some point, just don't limit it to every Death Watch show. Do it like a little bit every show. So,
every show. I mean, it's 15 minutes every show. Won't be too bad.
Yeah, I mean, I said the only thing that's really the kick of the air is that I've sat down so many times to start writing the first segment to do on this show, and I've just, every time I hit writer's block, you know, I listen to 40k audiobooks, I'm like, oh, that sounds awesome, I should be, you know, should be doing that, should be using that, that sort of language. But
I will do it.
Yeah, you reckon?
Yes.
Yeah, I suppose you do like writing, don't you? So,
yeah, I will do the first session.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
first of all, I have to know what the hell the characters were that we chose. So come on, let's hear.
Okay, we got the salamander Techmarine.
Yep.
We got the I gotta look him up now. But he set me off on. I'll come back to you, Mike. We'll talk about it after the break.
Okay.
Anyway, but I'll go back to it. We didn't get the Ultramarine Tactical Marine. We didn't get the bulk standard one, and we didn't get the Space Wolf Assault Marine. I think they were the two that got dropped out.
What?
So we had.
So you mean we got the medic on a bike?
Yep, we did hear something. So we got the Dark Angel Medic, we got the White Scar Librarian, we got the Salamander's Tech Marine, and what was the Devastator? The Devastator was something else as well. I can't remember what the Devastator chapter was. I'm terrible. I'm such a bad person. anyway, we'll work it out. But,
you created them and you don't even remember.
I know. I've been building the characters too. I've just been so fried by work recently.
Okay.
So what I do want to talk about today is, so we have 8th edition out now. Okay, and 8th edition has had a nigh-apocalyptic change to the actual Imperium itself.
Yeah.
You want to, like, yeah, I mean, you had more of a chance to read the fluff, so you want to quickly describe how 8th edition has changed the landscape of the Imperium.
So Cadia got destroyed, and with it, the Eye of Terror split the galaxy in half.
Yeah.
Giant warp rift right through the middle of the galaxy.
So it's like a giant rent now through the middle of the galaxy.
Yeah, on one side is the Imperium, which is still helped by Earth and Terra. So, obviously, a bit more stable and under control. And then on the other side of the rent, the Malefica, something or another they've called it.
Yeah.
Giving it a horrible space Latin name.
Yes.
He's obviously a lot more dark because there's nowhere near as much support on that side, so the Imperium on the other side is getting shredded.
Yeah. just on your space landing there, so I got to say, I did get a new audiobook recently I was listening to. I can't remember what it was called now. It was about some chapter I never heard of. At one point in the early part, they're talking about, you know, we need to get to the Amorium, you know, to get our weapons and such.
The love chamber.
The Amorium, you know. And I'm like, you know, why don't they just use a Latin word like armory?
Yes.
That's why do they have to add the eum to the end of an already Latin word? But anyway.
No, I still think it's the love chamber. It's where the Space Marines keep their love.
That's it. They have got two hearts, Mike. A lot of love in two hearts.
It's guarded by a pair of servitors armed with bass guitars.
Anyway, we digress. The nature of the Imperium has changed. You know, warp travel across the Scar is impossible. Even communication across the Scar is not impossible. So, you know, really the Imperium has been split in two. So, we're talking about Death Watch today. What are some of the elements of 8th edition that you think would sort of be quite different from... So you decide, I'm going to run a Death Watch game, and I want to set my Death Watch game in the 8th edition setting. So what elements would you bring in from 8th edition into a Death Watch game to show that it is, you know, in this new timeline?
To be honest, I think the main thing you should do is just make it more gritty, more last legs of the Imperium type thing. I mean, yes, the Primaris Marines are there and Roboat Girly Man's turned up and he's taken over and everything looks shiny and happy, but they are still fighting a losing campaign, as evidenced by the fact that Chaos now controls a giant great big line through the entire galaxy.
Yeah.
As such, I think, you should just make it a little bit more hopeless fighting.
So you're saying it's the grim, grim, dark future. Yeah. Sorry, the grim, dark, darkness of the... Sorry, the grim, grim, darkness of the far, far future now.
Yes.
Yes. So we're further into time and... Anyway.
Far plus one.
Exactly. One of the things you said there, I think the Primaris Marines is a big change. If you talk about a game with Marines...
Yeah.
Then that's probably the biggest change that happened to Marines for a long time, is the introduction of Primaris Marines. So, I mean, the whole point here is, so for those of you who haven't read the 8th edition fluff yet, basically, Gorman has, you know, returned to lead the Imperium and has, you know, sort of put out the call for, further enhancement of mankind's greatest soldiers.
Yeah, and Vesalius Callers.
Yeah, only to find out that Callers had already been working on it for some time, like 1,000 years, I think that's what he's working on it for, and has actually... you know, perfected perfection as such. You know, he has advanced the Space Marine beyond the point that it is already well known. And so suddenly you've got these Primaris Marines who are better armed, better equipped, stronger, tougher than your standard Marine as such.
And more resistant to Chaos, supposedly.
There you go. So
supposedly.
Yeah.
We'll wait and see when the first Chaos Primaris turn up.
It's propaganda. It's all propaganda. So... that way Chaos won't even try if they don't think it's possible.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah.
They'll focus everything on the more lowly Marines.
Yeah, because they never try to corrupt Grey Knights or Sisters of Battle.
That's it. So, I mean, look, yeah, certainly you could bring Primaris Marines into your own campaign.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't say as a playable character until we know a bit more about them.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, so there's not a lot of material yet that actually... breaks down what is different about a Primaris Marine versus a Standard Marine. It says they are tougher, stronger, as such, but it doesn't say they've got different implants. It doesn't say that
they've got two extra implants, but okay, I can't off the top of my head remember what they are.
A third heart? third heart and a second gallbladder.
They've got a second spleen and an additional appendix.
The point is, there's not a lot to really tell you about where they are now. Looking at the figures as well, I said to you earlier, but I reckon that the new Primaris Marine figures are bigger again than today's standard Marines, as today's Marines are against the old first edition Rogue Trader plastic kits.
No, the old RT-01s.
Yeah, exactly. The old beakies with all the knobs on the shoulders and leg plates and stuff, you know. So.
Yeah.
They are
certainly bigger than the standard Marines at the moment.
Yeah.
Standard Marines are bigger than the old Trader ones, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to tell you, like, I screwed up the other day. I was building a tactical squad for my Ultramarines, and you get quite a few different chests and legs and that sort of stuff, you know.
But do you know where you screwed up?
What's that?
Making them Ultramarines.
Yeah. I decided I'm going to do an all Mark V guy. You know, so Mark V chest, the knobbly shoulder, the knobbly legs, the beaky mask, that sort of stuff, you know.
The beaky mask is Mark VI, but good.
No, you can get there a beaky mask in Mark V as well. Let me rephrase that. Sorry, the knobbly bits appeared in Mark V, sorry, you're right, but the Mark VI was the beaky, but you still had some of the knobbly parts, and the things that Mark VI had differently was it didn't have a knee pad.
The shin pad came right up above the knee.
Yeah, and then some of the Mark VIs had the knobs on the shoulders and the knobs on the legs. Well, they didn't. So the Mark V's are the knobs on the legs.
Yeah.
Some Mark VIs had the shoulders, and they didn't have like the rimming around the shoulders. They were just like they were solid.
It was just a flat pauldron hat.
Yeah. So anyway, so I put all the pieces on, and what I'd done was
so you had him fully ribbed for her pleasure.
Yes. So to save time. When I was building my 10 models from this tactical squad, is I assembled the legs and torsos all at the start, you know, and I was just taking that pre-assembled leg torso on a base, putting on head, shoulders, weapon. And at the same time, I was watching TV with my wife. It was just, I watched TV while doing models as a distraction, and I distracted myself enough that by the time I glued the figure together, I realised I'd grabbed a Mark VII body and legs, and then put the knobbly shoulders and the beaky helmet on, and it was already glued enough that I wasn't going to start trying to pull it apart. So,
good job.
That's
good
it. Job. Yeah. So I failed at maintaining my own internal consistency.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, speaking of, I went and saw the new Spider-Man film yesterday. You haven't seen it yet, have you?
No.
I'm not going to spoil it for you. One thing I will say is that there is no internal consistency on what web fluid does. Yeah. You know, like what the sort of forces that can break it. Versus the sort of forces that can somehow hold are completely inconsistent across the film. So,
of course, it's a superhero movie.
That's it, yeah. No internal consistency. Anyway, so getting back to the conversation we're talking about. The Primaris Marines, and certainly what I want to talk about when we get to our war gear section today, is some of the war gear that you might want to bring into a game if you've now got access to the stuff that is in 8th edition as well.
Yeah.
There's a new Crusade in 8th edition taking place, you know, so people have said before, you don't have to run Death Watch as Death Watch. You could run Death Watch as
Space Marines.
Regular Space Marines, although probably it would be more likely they'll be of the same chapter at the time, though.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's plenty of reasons why you would either, you know, bring Death Watch into the new Crusade, even though the new Crusade is more Chaos-focused and Death Watch's specialty is more Xenos.
At the end of the day, they're still a specialist force that are good at killing things. That's and Chaos are killing just as much.
Death Watch don't turn up to a demonic incursion and go, not my jurisdiction.
Yeah.
I don't want to step on the Order of Xenos toes.
Yeah.
We're just going to pull back and wait for further advice. You know, we're going to radio with the guys and leave it alone.
Yeah.
I think that that would be the main element that would sort of give that sort of feel. And you're right, the even more dire nature of the setting. Now, here's a question. So, one of the big things that's changed in 8th edition is the reappearance of Ghoulman. Okay,
yeah.
So a Primarch, once again, walking the fields of battle, is, you know, one of the sort of the heralds of the new edition as such. So, would you, for narrative purposes, ever consider in a Death Watch game, including a scene where the players are in the same place as or actually meet the Primarch?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, you can. You just got to remember that it's a major event, especially from Space Marines who venerate the Primarchs as living gods.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily gods, but father figures.
Yeah, certainly.
Just keep in mind the rivalries and stuff, and don't be surprised if some players try and act like dicks.
Well, I guess it depends on your
maturity level of your players.
You know, it's like there's some players out there that go like, you know, Ghoulman's here, I want to see if we can kill him, let's do it, you know. It's like I always tell the story of those of you that have heard, that listened to the Order 66 podcast, be familiar with the story about when one of the GMs there was running a convention game, and the first scene in the game was the players getting their mission from a hut, and he's running this game, one of the players goes like, aren't huts bad guys? And the players are like, yeah. He says, aren't they all criminals? Yeah. We should attack this guy. Okay, we're attacking this hut. And the GM's like, are you sure he's trying to give you the mission? They're like, yeah, yeah, he's totally a bad guy. And so the GM just throws the module over his shoulder, goes, we're doing this? Okay, guys, roll this, let's do it, you know. So you will have players out like that sometimes, like, you know, I want to see if I can take on Gulliman. And we've said in the past before, if you ever wanted to represent the stats for Primarchs in the game, the stats are irrelevant.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if they will have someone who goes, I've got a melt a gun, I'm sitting across the table from him, I shoot him at point blank range.
And you discover that, you know, if you look at the 8th edition rules where he can ignore mortal wounds and can heal to full from, not heal to full, but certainly, like, you know, recover from being killed.
Yes.
That's,
yeah, well, you know.
But, so, I guess that's the main thing. So we'll find out more about 8th edition and the storyline as we get more of the codexes. We'll get a feel for the new Crusades, for the way that Chaos is choosing to incur into the galaxy.
Yep.
I think certainly the fact that we've seen the main box starting with Ultramarines versus Death Guard is that we'll hear a lot more about those forces early on. You know, that'll probably be an early focus. But I think, you know, a lot of people are still wondering what's become of Baal since the end of 7th edition and what's going to happen with the Blood Angels. So we'll see more there.
We know roughly what's happened with the Blood Angels.
Yeah.
That they got saved by Chaos and then Gulliman.
Yeah.
In that order.
Yeah, but how they develop from that, though? You
know, yeah.
How will that change the nature of their chapter as such?
Well, like, you'd expect that, considering the vast majority of their chapter was wiped out, that if they're going to be replaced with anyone, it'll be replaced with Primaris Marines.
Exactly right, yeah. So, and that's the thing, like, Primaris Marines have now, they've been moved under every single chapter, including, like, not just first, except first foundings, but subsequent second foundings, etc. So,
yeah,
they can really turn up anywhere. So, yeah, as a future thought experiment, we should, you know, when we know a little bit about Primaris Marines, we should try and work out what their base stat line would be.
Yeah, what their major differences are.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. Yep.
But we'll talk a bit more about the gear and that a bit later on anyway, so.
Okay.
All right, let's keep going.
All subjects report to the Administratum for career assignment.
Okay, so now it's time to begin talking about the Storm Wardens, the chapter that was created basically for the Death Watch game.
Yes.
And it has a few similarities with other created chapters that we'll talk about. So let's start off by going through the history of the Storm Wardens. So, like all created chapters, we don't know who their founding chapter is.
Yeah.
You know, there's all sorts of rumours about, you know, why they all have this sort of nature, but...
well,
no.
We know for a reason why, but I'm not sure if... Yeah.
Do we know? We know that for sure, though? I'm not sure.
Yeah, like, yeah. Absolutely, we know that for sure.
Okay, well, so which is the fact that they are derived from
one of the traitor chapters.
Traitor chapters, yeah. That's it, yeah. And potentially one of the ones that was struck off the list.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I mean...
I haven't heard any word about that, but I know that they are Blood Ravens, Storm Wardens, Minotaurs, any of the created chapters.
You can usually work out which one they derived from as well. So
yeah.
That's right. We have discussed this earlier on the show as well.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's never been a published thing.
Yeah.
Such,
yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so what that means is that when they created the Storm Wardens, they had to come up with a history that basically explained the lack of information about them. And in the case of the Storm Wardens, this was a incident known as the Nemesis Incident. So effectively, the former Chapter Master, Owen Glendweir, took elements of the Storm Wardens to the Storopes cluster, and he did this because of a reading of the Emperor's Tarot by the Chief Librarian. That basically said that there's something important you have to become involved in there. So there they ended up joining forces with an Inquisitor who was already prosecuting a campaign against the Xenos race known as the Enslavers. And this race was threatening to overrun multiple Imperial worlds.
Yeah.
So, the end of the campaign was considered a success. You know, the Enslavers were defeated. 3 worlds were saved. 7 worlds were subject to Exterminatus. So, you know, moderate victory overall. but the main thing is that the Chapter Master, Glendweir, and most of the First Company were deemed to have been tainted by the psychic energies of the Enslavers.
Yeah.
So the Inquisitor in question originally wanted the tainted Marines to submit themselves for liquidation, but after a bit of negotiation, there was a compact that was reached where they basically said that the tainted Marines, including the Chapter Master, would be interred in Mstasis vaults until a cure for the enslaver's psychic corruption could be found. But the Inquisitor did further stipulate that the vaults themselves had to be stored deep beneath the fortress monastery, and that all records of the incident, of the origins of the chapter, of the individuals in the first company, of everyone that disappeared, had to be struck from all record of the of both the Imperium and of the Storm Wardens.
Yeah.
So, in honestly, there are Storm Wardens who are aware of their history as such, like in the chapter, you know, the now chapter masters and their retinues, you know, certainly know about it as such. But it's a well kept chapter secret.
Yeah.
In traditionally, only dreadnoughts of the chapter who were around from that time actually know where exactly on Sacris the vaults are kept, and all of the company's dreadnoughts have taken a vow of silence. So, not much chance of them being found anytime soon, unless it becomes warranted for storyline purposes. So the new chapter master is Lord Grath MacLear. So he basically led the chapter through a number of historic encounters with Xenos, including defending their own system from Warboss Krasgrul's Warg, an orc Warg that nearly reached Sacris. So the chapter itself has been heavily committed to the Achilleus Crusade, which is the crusade to reclaim the Jericho Reach, whereas a lot of other chapters which committed gave parts of a company or maybe a full company. Seven companies of the Storm Wardens were committed to take part in the crusade.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're a key feature of the Jericho Reach. You know, the Watch Fortress, I'm sure you would find plenty of Storm Wardens both within and outside of the Death Watch as well, because they're a major part of the crusade. So not a lot of history, you know, pretty much what you can fit in a couple of pages in the main book, but I mean, that's what they created for the purposes of the RPG.
Yeah.
So, Storm Wardens in the Death Watch. They really bring a combination doctrine of close assault and armoured combat. So they do like their tanks, but they are also sword wielding, you know, so they are the epitome of drive me closer, I want to hit it with my sword.
Yep. of course.
They identify those two doctrines. They have a strong history of encounters with unusual Xenos. So not necessarily with, I mean, obviously with orcs, but also with things like Slaw, Enslavers, you know, these are more unusual Xenos that are not so well known in the Imperium. And of course, they're already very present in the Jericho Reach. So there's a high likelihood that they will distinguish themselves before the Death Watch, and you know, there's a good chance that they will then become invited to join the Death Watch, basically.
Yeah.
So when it comes to building a Storm Warden, they get +5 strength and +2 wounds. So, you know, it does sort of meet that close combat that mentality. They get the Thunder's Call Solomon ability and the Aspire to Glory demeanor. So their Solomon Squad abilities, Thunder's Call allows you to call out an opponent in combat, and if you attack it solo, you gain +10 on a weapon skill attacks against it, and the opponent takes -10 to hit anyone other than you, and must make an agility test to be able to move away from you.
Yeah. Tanking ability.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. But the +0 agility test to move away, depending on what you're fighting, isn't fantastic, but still, they still get the penalty if they try to attack someone else anyway.
Yeah, and there's always a chance that they'll fail. I mean, it doesn't matter how good their agility is, there's always a chance of failure.
Yeah. The squad attack ability is called Lightning Strike. This one's a bit odd. Basically, it allows the squad, anyone infected by it, to gain a surprise round of combat at the start of combat, even when there is no surprise. So, hard to narratively describe that, I guess, but, you know, effectively, like, it just means you pretty much always go first in combat, you know, but you may even get two actions before your opponent does, depending on how well you're off initiative, but...
Yeah. Plus, you get that bonus to hit
for the
surprise round as
exactly.
well.
Yeah. Their squad defense is shield and sword, which means that squad mates may make parry attempts against attacks targeting allies within 2 meters, and anyone who's hit by a melee attack can use their reaction to have a free attack back. That was pretty good, I think, overall, in terms of, I mean, it would suit a, you know, mostly
Malay
squad, as such, if you had that, if you weren't so diverse, but, you know, it's still quite a good one. When it comes to the Storm Warden's progression chart, they get some weird ones. So they get Gamble all the way to +20. they get Tracking to +20. That's the only skills they get in their chart. In terms of talents, they get Junior Hunter Death, Hammer Blow, Stalwart Defense, Talented Drive Ground Vehicles, and Thunder Charge. So,
mostly melee.
Yeah, a mixed bag, but you know, it's.
Yeah.
I suppose that, you know, the obvious would be for these guys would be an Assault Marine choice.
No, the obvious is Professional Gambler.
Professional Gambler, sorry, yes. That's true. That's right. This Marine knows when to hold them.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, they're chapter trappings. First off, they can have the option of the Sacris Claymore, which replaces the Astartes Combat Knife in their arsenal. If you compare it to the Combat Knife, you get additional D10 of damage, and it's unbalanced.
And it's two-handed.
Yeah, that's it. So, yeah, that's true. so unbalanced, it's weird. I mean, I suppose it's a Claymore, so it's hard to parry with, but when they've got the ability to parry, making them an unbalanced weapon not very friendly. But anyway. Other option they get is a Tempest Amulet, where this one can either be +2 on strength, +2 on weapon skill when fighting a single foe, or it can count as a charm. So, pretty
good. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's alright.
Yep. Their psychic powers, interesting. So, first off, Ancestor's Rage. So, the target of this ability gains a number of exotic melee weapon proficiencies equal to the caster's psi rating, and also gains 5 times the caster's psi rating weapon skill. So,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how often you'll come across exotic melee weapon. I suppose if you're fighting Xenos, you might just pick up that, I don't know, the Harlequin's Caress and just go, I'm all over this stuff, you know.
I'm totally going to use this tainted Xenos weaponry.
That's right, yes. Call to Arms summons your psi rating in ancestral warriors to join you in a fight. Stats wise, they cast Imperial Guard.
Wow.
So their ancestors weren't very strong, I guess, you know. So.
Well, I suppose when you're just after the bulk of extra numbers, when you want that additional combatant bonus.
Yeah,
it's not bad if you're fighting against a bunch of cultists and you want to hack them to pieces.
Yeah, interesting thing here is, so if you summon those, could you use those to attack a horde as though it was a regular character? Because, I mean, you know, the fact the Marines can sort of damage hordes is really something particular to Marines as such, so...
I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. They are Ancestral Guardians, after all, so Ancestral Warriors. Anyway, Crown of Lightning allows you to do D10 times your Psi Rating damage with a shock quality to one opponent. And you can actually sustain that for 2d10 additional damage every turn.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's pretty good. It's probably the best damage ability, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely.
Hammer of the Emperor allows you to cause an earthquake with a radius or I'm not sure. It says over an area of 100 meters times your psi rating. Structures take 3d10 times your psi rating damage. And any people must test agility at -20 or fall over. That being said, it does inflict D5 fatigue on the psyker and can only be used every 24 hours.
Yeah, I suppose there's a one-off thing for taking down a siege line or damaging buildings. It's probably very good for... I suppose if you're going up against an army, it could certainly cause some problems.
Yeah, well. I mean, look, yeah, if you've got a psi rating of, say, 300 metres, area is decent size. It's a
big area, yeah.
Mark of Scorn. The target takes your psi rating in additional melee damage, and all Righteous Fury attempts are automatically confirmed against them.
Nice.
Yeah, so good build damage boost. Because in the areas that it helps, because you know, it affects the target, everyone attacking gets a benefit of that one as well. So.
Yeah.
And finally, Thunder's Shell. So the penetration of attacks against the Psyker is reduced by their Psy rating. But any attack that normally ignores armor for any reason loses that ability. So I guess like War Weapons, for example, would lose that.
War Weapons, yeah, it would be good against demons and that sort of stuff. Yeah. Protecting yourself against...
Falling damage. Falling damage is never a problem for you, Mike.
Yeah. Damn falling damage. Okay.
Alright, their Primarch's Curse is called Thirst for Glory. At level 1, they have to test willpower, to strike willpower, whenever challenged. If they fail, they have to engage in combat with whoever challenged them.
Yeah.
It was presumably they're challenged to combat, not like, you know, challenged to a game of chess. You're going down, Jimmy.
Well, it depends if you consider chess gambling, because if it is, they'll always win, so it won't be a problem.
That's it. Level 2, they will only use weapons of equal measure to answer a challenge. So, you know, if their opponent isn't well armed, they may even resort to dropping their weapon and just going with fists.
Yeah.
Yeah, to try and keep it nice and, you know, really test themselves. And then finally,
fair.
Yeah. Finally, level 3, if they're ever wounded during a challenge, they have to make a minus 20 willpower test to not kill their opponent or to withdraw from the combat. So, could be tough if your group likes sparring together a lot.
Yeah.
Make sure you use blunt weapons that won't cause any damage, I don't know, or have a really good willpower. Okay, in terms of their alternate specialties, there's only one in the books, which is the Tempest Blade. So it just goes, they're a little bit more Stormwarden-y than the standard Stormwarden.
Yeah.
And there are no successor chapters. This is pretty much consistent with all the creator chapters. They don't get successors.
They don't
as well.
Get successors, no.
So I guess when it comes to playing a Stormwarden, a few words of advice would be the reason that you challenge people, the reason they challenge their opponents, is because they're trying to challenge themselves. You know, it's all about testing their own limits and their own abilities and such, and that's why they believe so heavily in the challenge. They very much exemplify facta non verba, so, you know, deeds, not words. You know, that they really go after people, or they like people or side with people who don't just talk of their actions, actually demonstrate them. And I guess also remember that Stormwardens have a deep connection to their ancestors. You know, they have a very oral history, since all their sort of written history was destroyed by the Inquisition. They rely heavily upon the sort of memories of their past.
Yeah, which also means that you should be desperately trying to forge your own history and own story that can be told and retold in the future.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Any other comments on Stormwardens?
No, not really.
Okay, then.
It's got a nice paint scheme.
They do have a nice paint scheme. Yeah, you can't go wrong with blue and white. It's just like, what is that other chapter like that? Ultramarines, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, the Ultramarines, they just don't pull it off.
They just throw yellow in there and that yellow just ruins it.
Yeah.
So.
And red.
That's it. All right, let's get going.
Revere the Omnisia, for it is the source of all power.
Okay, so I'm sort of skipping over plot hooks here and going straight to war gear, because I think we've sort of covered off the plot hooks concept by talking about how you would bring the story of the 8th edition changes into a Death Watch campaign. But let's have a quick talk about the gear of 8th edition. You know, so I think probably the three pieces of gear that we've seen appear for Space Marines in 8th edition that, you know, you might want to bring into your Death Watch game include Mark 10 armor, the Tacticus arm, which includes also the Gravis pattern as well. Now, if you read the description of this, it says that it has almost the same level of protection as Turnator armor. So it's not hard there, therefore, to really say that you know, you could look for increasing the arm value to similar to maybe one or two off Turnator armor, but that it provides all the regular mechanical benefits of standard armor as such,
standard
in terms,
power
of, in terms of the versatility.
I think the main issue with it, though, is the fact that it's sized for a Primaris Marine.
Exactly right.
Yeah, it'd be like giving a Guardsman Space Marine
armor. Yeah, that's it, yeah. But, you can include that. Then you've also got some of the weapons. So the two main ones you've got now are the Hellblaster, which is basically
A fancy
plasma gun, longer-range plasma gun that seems more prone to explosion. So, just what a plasma gun needs to be. Like, I mean, you read the battle report in the new White Dwarf, and pretty much like the Hellblaster squad pretty much wiped themselves out in that.
That's the way plasma weapons work.
Exactly right. But more importantly, you've got the auto bolt rifle, the bolt rifle, I should say. So it makes me think. I was trying to like think of a modern analogy of the bolt rifle versus the bolter.
I see it as a difference between an assault rifle and a battle rifle.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I mean, I was more thinking that, like, because it's made me look now at a bolter as more of a carbine. You know, that at the end of the day, you know, it is a bolter is effectively a CQB weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see with the figures, some of the figures have, you know, sights on their bolter, you know, but most of them don't. But I mean, I suppose you could say they've got prey sense in their helmets anyway. But I've always considered, you know, bolters to be, you know, the main battle rifle of the Marines, but now looking at the bolt rifles, it makes me think that they are more like, you know, longer range engagement rifles and such.
Yeah, I see it more as like the bolter as being the M16 and the bolt rifle as being the M14.
I think the M4 is the carbine version of the frame.
No, the old 1950s version of the ones with, you know, the heavier caliber, longer range, better durability.
Okay, there's gonna be gun nerds out there, like in parts of the world that are screaming at you right now. By the way, just for the record, yeah. So
yeah, the M16 is great. Okay, there you go. So fantastic, yes.
But they just looking at how the figures even hold them as such, you know, like in the miniatures, they look more of the figures appear to be aiming down the guns. Yeah, it's almost like look at the
more like an actual soldier.
Yeah, I look at the pictures of Marines with bolters, and more often than not, they're firing from the hip. You know, in some capacity as such. So, stats wise, I mean, a bolt is a bolt. Like, you know, a bolt pistol has as much damage as a bolt gun does. You know, as a heavy bolter does. They're different. They just have different rates of fire, different ranges. So it shouldn't be too hard to convert a bolt rifle, just give it a bit of extra range. Would you agree with that? Like maybe like 150 meter range as such, but still bolt gun damage, and maybe the accurate quality.
Yeah, I'd say probably better range, probably the same rate of fire, or actually maybe even a little bit worse.
Yeah,
but more accurate, more damage, more range.
Yeah,
I'd look at those three things as what you want to tool up a little bit.
Yeah, and for plasma, for the
maybe blasters, slightly less clip.
For the Hellblaster, you could probably create a new trait called Gets Really Hot.
Gets really hot. Doesn't just hit your arm, it hits your torso as well.
Hits whatever the least armoured part of your body is.
Yes.
Don't want to be a sergeant not wearing a helmet.
Yeah.
So just a couple of thoughts about how you might bring that gear. I think that now that it's out there, yeah, players will want to start seeing it in their games as well. So, you know, feel free to come up with ways you might want to bring those in. Alright, shall we move on?
Yep. Right. Sounds good.
My lord, the information you requested is now available for your review.
Alright, Mike, it's review time. And I want to talk today about Shadow War Armageddon. Because I've been nerding up over this book pretty heavily since it came out.
Yep.
So a bit of background, from what I understand, and you probably know more about this than I did, but they did actually do a limited release of this as a board game with figures and with terrain, and it sold out
almost instantly within a couple of days. And they haven't released it again as that box set
but you can still buy all the terrain from that now individually.
I think it's actually slightly different terrain.
Okay.
Yeah, that you get individually. Yes.
Alright, but you can buy the book for it anyway separately.
Oh, yeah, and you can buy the book separately,
and a lot of the materials are available to download as well. So first off, Mike, give me your impression of Shadow Realm again.
Necromunda.
So
it's skirmish, small squad skirmish.
Yep.
But because it's skirmish, you can split the squad up. None of this unit coherency, though keeping your guys together does help. It's more tactical, small group, no big powerful characters. Everyone's sort of around about the same sort of power level, supposedly. So it's a bit more luck and skill.
Okay. Well, let me tell you. So first of all, I do like it. I've been very much a fan of it. There are some things about the game that failed to hit my Necromunda, you know, sort of fan factor or such.
The experience section is what failed.
Yeah. So first off, like, Necromunda it had elements of Blood Bowl in it. You know, so you got XP for your guys doing various things. They got enough XP, they got to unlock abilities as such. In Shadow Realm again, basically, at the end of each game, you pick one person. It could be anyone, for no reason, that person advances.
Yeah.
And they then get either a skill, like randomly get the skill, or a trait, or a bonus to one of their stats, that sort of thing. The other thing is that, depending on your army, you may not have much choice of equipment at all. You know, like, I mean, the first one I built was a Elder army, and so their main troop types are basically that they've got their leader, they've got Dire Avengers, and they've got Guardians. Okay, yeah. Dire Avengers have Dire Avenger Shuriken catapults. Guardians have shuriken catapults. That's it. The only sort of hostility is in what the Dire Avenger X arc.
Yeah, everyone else is kitted out the same. Yeah,
exactly right. Yeah. Now some of the ones, like you look at Chaos Space Marines, they get, you know, you can have, you know, four very different characters on the board as such. Yeah, with certain factions, there's not a lot of
choice. Some factions, there's not a lot of choice. I found it when I was putting together a Dark Elder group, squad, having a play with that, and I worked out that within three or four missions, everyone would be kitted out with the best of anything they could have, and that would be it. There was no room for advancement in gear very quickly.
So one of the rules in the game is that when you finish a mission, you have the choice to either reinforce or to resupply. And so if you reinforce, you get more troops. If you resupply, you get more gear. The issue is that...
You get to do both.
We'll go through... We'll talk about this afterwards, but you said that to me last time, and I looked up in the book, you definitely only get to do one or the other. And when you run it through, there's an online battle manager, and you only get to do one. Definitely get to do one or the other, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah, you get to get one or the other. Which I will now call out, and I'll put this link to the show. There is a fantastic website called Shadow Warzone, which lets you upload your roster. You can run leagues through it as such. It does all the management for you, has all the rules built in. You can put pictures of your army, people can look at your army as well. It's an awesome website.
We'll definitely have a look at that. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so getting back to the rules. So you can either resupply or reinforce. Now, if you reinforce, those troops can come with gear, for example. But you can only come with the gear they've got, and they can't swap their gear to someone else until they've run a game, or they've been through a game. Likewise, if you resupply, you put that equipment onto certain people. So people have sort of got ways of gaming it now, like, you know, in game one, reinforce, get a guy who's naked, basically has no gear, and then at the end of the first mission, next mission, you know, resupply, get two weapons and give, you know, allocate them as such. You know, it's a very sort of gamed system of how you utilize your points. There's also some troops you can only reinforce under very particular circumstances. So some troops, you get 100 points if you reinforce, plus you get an extra 100 points if you choose to spend one of your Promethean caches at the end of the game. So 200 points is your conceivable maximum. There are plenty of troops out there that have a higher than 200 point cost.
Yeah.
Like Tyranid Warriors, for example. Which pretty much means that what you've got to do is you've got to hope you get one of the missions where you get, like, the caches that give you additional points if you recruit. And you can get up to 400 points, which would cover most needs. But still, it's a very particular set of circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I've also found, so what I've done is, so I made these 8 teams, and I started playing a league at home with my son. So pretty much we just sit down, I give him one of the teams, I take the other team, we just play it out and we see how they go, and then I advance the teams as per league to see how they develop. There is a heavy luck factor. The team that wins a game gets D3 Promethean caches, which is the mechanic to win the game, basically. Getting 3 is a huge difference to getting 1. Because 1's what you get for losing as well. So, you know, a team can become very powerful very quickly if they just get a lot of Promethean caches, because one they can start doing then is, in the individual fights, they can spend Promethean caches to bring in support troops as such, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the other thing. And then the other thing about the progression of it that I didn't like so much was I like the thematic style of Necromunda Gangs. You know, it just seems less congruous to the setting that there's these various forces fighting over Prometheum in this under hive of a planet as such. You know, like, I'm just glad they didn't put chaos demons in as a choice, because it would make zero sense whatsoever that chaos demons are fighting over Prometheum. And the fact you've got inexperienced chaos demons waiting to level up as such, you know.
A new chaos demon.
Now you can see that a lot of their decisions about what units to put into the game was dependent upon what options are sold at Games Workshop stores. Because let's look at, for example, Eldar. So I mentioned before, you get Dire Avengers, you get Guardians. Both of those can be purchased at the Games Workshop store. The support characters are an Ortarch, a Wraith Guard, or a Wraith Blade. all of which can be bought at the store. Okay, so no options for Howling Banshees, Striking Scorpions, any of those things, which are all fine cast figures that can only be bought through the web store.
Yeah.
And in fact, I actually found when you go into Games Workshop, a lot of the boxes now have a little sticker on them saying, you know, usable in Shadow War Armageddon as well. I found it odd that Marines get, they're all scouts, but the Chaos Space Marines are Chaos Space Marines.
It's because Chaos Space Marines don't have scouts.
That's true, yeah. And the Chaos Space Marines are handled by the fact that their juvenile troop is Chaos cultists who don't metamorphose into Chaos Space Marines. They just become, they just start getting the ability to get traits.
And then they just become slightly better cultists.
Senior cultists.
Senior cultists. Senior meat shield.
Exactly, yeah. Whereas, for example, Eldar, the Guardians, naturally can progress to become Dire Avengers and such. You know, they probably get the best upgrade option and such because they just freely get the equipment associated with their higher tier rank and such.
Yeah.
Look, every group feels different. Some of the groups feel incomplete. Inquisition was just such a hard group to build, and it's just I couldn't really find a good set of options as such. When you look at the Shadow War Zone website I mentioned before as well, some people have got, there's some, in the forums there are some, on Reddit actually, on the Reddit page, there are some people that sort of created some guides to doing squads or for it, and a lot of them say pretty much, if the option is there, guns. So if you're doing Sisters of Battle, just all Storm Bolters. With the gunners and bolters with the regular Sisters, like it just... I think that the layout of terrain would have a very big impact on how the game would go. So it's going to come down to how much terrain do you have. Like, I've only got sort of 5 pieces of terrain I could utilize to make the board as such. So ranged weapons have a much bigger impact then, because the enemy troops have to cross large areas of open space where they don't have cover.
They're going to get shot to pieces.
Exactly right, yeah. So it's, my tabletop has not benefited melee-based teams. But I think that overall it's been very well put together. You know, I think it was something that was missing from the 40K setting. And it's, the main thing is it's a very easy option to get into, because in most cases you could get away with buying a single box set to actually do your army. So once again, with Eldar, I could just bought the Dire Avengers, not had any Guardians, and I could have made a completely legal army and done it all with a single box set. Even to get every single option I could have had, it only cost me about $120 Australian to get a Dire Avengers and a Guardians and an Ortark and a Wraith Guard box set as such.
Yeah.
So, yeah, different ones can be different, but, you know... I did also, speaking to Games Workshop, I never mentioned this previously, but they did tell me at the store that it's actually led to a lot of people trying out new armies, especially in the lead-up to 8th edition. A lot of people were like, oh, I can play Shadow Warzone with only spending, you know, $50. I'm going to try, and I've never tried, I'm going to try Tau. And if I like Tau, maybe when 8th edition comes out, I will try
a Tau army.
And that's what I've done. You know, I tried Eldar for the first time, and now I'm, you know, tempted to build an Eldar army for 8th edition. Except for the fact that building the Eldar for Shadow Warzone gave me the... I didn't like it at all, because it gave me horrible flashbacks to Jane Zarr and that effing single toe of contact to the base.
Yes. Yeah, Jane Zarr.
Yeah, but, you know, I got through the nightmares. Everything's good now. I will continue my Eldar army.
Okay.
Anything else you want to say about Shadow Warzone?
No, I agree with pretty much...
Sorry, Shadow War?
I agree with most of your points there. The XP system I'm definitely not a fan of, and the Promethean cache as the reward, which is how you win the game, I'm not a huge fan of, because you can save up a bunch and then use them to just keep winning and keep getting more, and then you win pretty quickly once you do it that way. There is a lot of weight towards shooting armies over close combat armies. Not because shooting's better than close combat, but just because of the way sustained fire works in this system, there's no chance of jamming, and you don't roll to see if you run out of ammo until after you've fired all your shots.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I certainly found, like, in the games I've been playing, like, playing Eldar Army with a scatter laser with 3 sustained fire dice, has been very beneficial. But I've had some really poor rolls in the games I've been playing with my son as well.
Yeah.
So, And he's at shocking loss. He's not a gamer, I gotta say. He loves gaming, but he rolls so badly. If he goes into life as a gamer, he's gonna be a very disappointed young man, because he's gonna constantly die in every game he tries out.
Because he just rolls ones all the time.
So when he was a baby, I put a D20 in his hand and he sort of dropped out of his hand and he rolled a one straight away. I should have known then and there that the dice were not in his favour.
Oh well.
Yeah. Alright, let's keep going.
Ignorance is a blessing. The data you requested is unavailable.
Okay, so for our final discussion, this has come up from a controversial Facebook topic that I was paying a lot of attention. I was watching with macabre interest recently. I didn't get involved, I just sort of watched it, but I don't want to go into the topic of the actual conversation, because that was more specific as such, but it's led me to the something I want to discuss.
Yeah.
Okay. So, in this podcast, we talk about 40K gaming, okay, but we specifically focus on the gaming system from FFG.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, 40K role-playing came around a long time before FFG did. You know, plenty of people did adaptations of the old fantasy system. Some people used Inquisitor to do it as well. But
the original Rogue Trader was supposed to be it.
Yeah, the original Rogue Trader. But other people just ran games in 40K. You know, they took either generic systems like GURPS or Alternate, whatever, and just ran 40K games, or they just did it without systems. You know? And I've certainly run a lot of systemless games in the past as well. You know, so what actually is a systemless game? You know, there's not a good way to describe it. I can never find a way to describe a systemless game that makes it sound preferable to a normal game. Because usually what I say is, oh, it's a game where decisions are made by arbitration. So the players say what they want to do, and the GM decides outright the outcome of their actions.
Yeah.
You know, there's no luck factor. You know, it's simply just because you want to do that, this is the outcome. And I guess when I think if I take a step back and look at that from on high, I think, well, that sounds pretty crappy, because it means that every time something bad happens to you, that's because your GM's being a jerk and decided just to do that. But it doesn't feel like that when I run systemless games. I mean, first of all, what is your opinion of playing a game where the system is either there's either no system or the system's not being used? Be honest.
No, I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
Not a fan at all.
Yep.
Never have been.
Okay.
The problem is it comes down to too much of a small kid, he said, she said, oh, I got you, no, you didn't, my shields are up.
Yeah.
It, you know, whenever you say, oh, okay, my trained sniper sets up on the building across the road, waits for them to come out, draws a line on them, you know, tracks them, and then takes the shot, and I miss. Why?
Yeah.
How often do trained snipers miss from 100 metres away when they've had time to set up, when they know who the target is, when they're lining up perfect? Yeah, it feels... The problem with systemless games is it's like when you're watching a movie.
Yeah.
And they talk about how awesome this person is. Like, say, The Jackal.
Okay,
yeah. I'm going to assume that most people have seen the movie The Jackal.
Yeah, which one? The Bruce Willis one?
The Bruce Willis one.
Okay.
Richard Gere, Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis is this awesome assassin. Goes around the world killing people for millions of dollars. Just about perfect. Hired to assassinate the president.
No, the president's wife.
Yeah, the president's wife.
Oh, spoiler alert. That's one of the sun reveals in the film.
Yeah. And he sets up, and somehow his flawless plan fails. And why does it fail? Essentially because the GM decided, if he pulls this off, where does the story go?
Yeah, Chronicle's over. Yeah.
Chronicle's over.
Yeah.
And that's what it always feels like. It feels like those movies or TV shows where someone's so good. And it's a common problem as well with other stories as well, where they're fighting against the characters are fighting against someone who's a bad guy and they're exceptionally good, and the GM's made him out to be just about perfect, but he has to tone them down because otherwise the players are never going to be able to actually defeat this person. But it's more noticeable in a systemless game.
Yeah. So let me give you a counter-argument here. So
I'm unconvinced.
You're unconvinced. Okay. Already. I'm going to give you the argument. So on Sunday, I'm running the next game of my Siren game. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a game I'm running now for 4 years. And most fun we'll play for 7 hours. We start about midday and finish about 7, okay? And in that time, I'll maybe call for 4-5 roles, maybe, in 7 hours. And there's a few reasons for that. One of them is that it's a terrible system. It's at low level, it's fine, but it's like they just never play tested it past starting level, and they put in an exponential growth factor which becomes completely broken to the point that at the level that the game is at now, any opponent which threatens my combat characters would one-shot kill the non-combat characters, and any opponent that my non-combat characters can sort of contend with, my combat characters will just destroy in one hit as well. Or they can't, you know, more often actually, the non-combat characters can't hit your opponents. It's literally, it is mathematically impossible for them to actually lay a finger on the opponent as such. Because the game system is just broken. But the players still like the game, the players still like the setting as such. So what I do is I have sheets. You know, they have stats. I more use the stats as an indicative factor of what they can or can't do.
Okay,
so,
in that case, it's not systemless, is it?
That's right. So, you're getting more towards, I suppose, what you would call diceless here, for example. So the character, I mean, those stats could be a description, though.
Yeah.
You know, it's no different from saying my character can drive versus my character has 2 points in driving. You know, the fact that there's an arbitrary number assigned to it simply means that my character that can drive better than someone that can drive with 1 point in driving, for example, as a comparison. But I've actually found with that group that in the game we're playing, everyone has decided that the decisions they make, the things that they choose to do, are more fun and more important than how well they do them. And that usually when things go bad for the group, it's not because of dumb luck, it's because they made a poor decision or had an ill-conceived plan, or no plan whatsoever, more often than not. Which usually means that leads to hilarity in that particular game. But funny games aside, the other place I like to use systemless games particularly is horror. And the reason that I like it in horror is because systems provide a level of certainty to the characters. You know, so my weapon does 3d6 damage and my opponent has 12 hit points, so I know on average I've got to hit it however many times in order
twice, whatever
to do it, etc. That sort of thing. You know, you can work that in your head and go, okay, well, if it's a gun, I've got 10 rounds, I can probably kill 5 guys before it's a real problem for me as such. Whereas the first horror games I really ran, for example, at convention, I ran a number of games based on the Aliens series. Now, I didn't want my players sitting there counting ammunition, counting aliens, working out, are we overwhelmed or are we, you know, can we stand and fight? I wanted, you know, the aliens were more of an environmental factor. You know, when they're in the room with you, you need to get out of the room or die. Standing and fighting really isn't an option as such. So how much ammunition you've got and how much damage your gun does is completely irrelevant. You know, you want to try and get yourself in a situation where you're not in a room with a horde of aliens and such. And I ran Cold and Dark in another horror game for our group some years ago now. And the only part I really worried about the system there was for the madness roles as such, because that was sort of a fun factor of the game, was how the characters' mental state broke down as such, you know. But for horror, I feel that taking away the comfort factor of the dice can add to the uncertainty, you know. And or you've got games like Call of Cthulhu where, you know, the stats of Elder Gods is just so ridiculous as to, there's no point even rolling. You know, it's like, you know, using Primarchs in 40K. It's like, you know, the best stat description is, if they want to succeed, they do. You know, the only reason that they lose is because they've chosen to as such. So I do like it in horror. But yeah, but it does come back to talking one thing about the silent game. What works in that game, as I said, is that the group is more focused on the outcomes of their actions, not the luck that applies to that. And that works well because that group likes that. You know, so I think that systemless gaming is particular to the group itself. You can be using a system in order to get a feel for the stats. You may be just making it up as you go, but yeah, you need to be very careful with the GM if you do want to try running games without a system or without dice, that your decisions are not just arbitrary dick moves. Like, yeah. You know, they need to foul here, so therefore, that just does, what they try to do doesn't work.
I still feel that luck should play a part, though, because luck does play a part in the real world. Sometimes things just don't go your way. You do everything right, and it just doesn't work out.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and it can have life-affecting consequences, you know. Some years ago, a professional athlete went skiing and things went pear-shaped for him, and realistically, I would have said that someone in his physical condition going skiing with all the best equipment on a perfectly fine, safe slope, what could possibly go wrong? Well, yeah, things went wrong.
Well, let's go back to your analogy, your sniper analogy. You said it yourself, you know, there's no reason that a well-prepared, set-up, skilled sniper should miss.
Yeah,
and that's right. In a game where I'm administering, if the players have clearly done everything right, there's no need to sort of throw in the arbitrary. Well, you rolled a one. You know, it's automatically missed, no matter how hard you tried it. Because in reality, you're right. There is always, failure is always an option.
Yeah.
And
it goes both ways. Like you just said there. Sometimes you'll miss because they'll just say, "Well, you just miss."
Yeah.
Which is terrible.
Yeah.
And other times you'll
bend down at the last moment.
Yeah. And other times you'll roll poorly and you'll miss, which also is annoying, but it's part of life. Sometimes things don't go your way.
Yeah.
Okay, but when it's narratively done, it just feels a lot worse.
Yeah. I mean, even in a system game, the whole thing is like how you handle failure is as much a part of the game as
how
you achieve success as well. So
Yes. I know, I'm just not a fan of systemless games.
Yeah.
Completely systemless games, at any rate. If there's a framework like you have in place with the Scion game where everyone has a character sheet, gives you a rough indication of how strong they are, you don't just say, you overpower that person. You take a glance at their sheet and you go, well, this is a non-combat character trying to grapple a Titan's 100-handed minion.
Yeah.
What do you know, they fail.
Yeah, that's it. And to be honest, that system, the system makes itself system because, as I said, in that example, it is mathematically impossible for that character to roll the result on their dice that would actually give them the outcome of success there. So
exactly.
Yeah, but I just take that. I just skip the whole rolling a bunch of dice and to get an impossible result. But look, I think that it's something that each player, each GM, each group needs to work out for themselves.
Yeah.
Going back to conventions, there are some conventions I've been to in Australia where, they have these things called triptychs, where it's sort of like, here is a sort of short, really in-depth, cathartic, systemless game that's more designed to, challenge you mentally than it is to challenge your dice rolling skills, and they're always successful at those conventions. Other conventions focus more on the hey. You want to play Pathfinder, you want to play D&D, you want to play Star Wars, we're very straightforward. All the games are on the website, easy to understand, easy to read, fantastic for new players to get into for the first time. Different strokes, different folks, really. It just comes down to
what you guys prefer.
Yeah.
But don't try and force someone who loves systemless games to run something crunchy like Rollmaster, or someone who loves super crunchy systems to run nothing but systemless.
Yeah, well, I mean, just about content. That is one of the challenges that happens, though, when someone writes down, I'm running Cyberpunk, at a con, and comes and goes, oh, I love Cyberpunk, I'm going to play that. And they turn up, and the guy's like, yeah, well, look, it's a Cyberpunk world, but I'm not actually rolling dice, or I've decided I'm using Savage Worlds instead, or I'm, sometimes people, when you say I'm running this game, that sets a level of expectation.
That they'd actually be running the game they've said they're running? Yeah, a crazy expectation. It's like going into a shop and saying, yeah, I want to buy a sandwich, and they give you a can of dog food.
I think it's like a can of sandwiches. It's what you wanted. It's just not packaged the way you wanted it. Anyway.
It's not even what you wanted.
Yeah. All right, then. I think we've said enough. Let's get on to closing out the show.
Okay.
All astropaths in the choir chamber. Message incoming.
Okay, so final part of the show. This is normally the part where we do reviews and comments. We have had no new reviews, and the only comments we've really had have been people saying, guys, where are you? You're going to do a show sometime soon? We've done a show. We'll never do another one soon, hopefully. I've got no more travel coming up until August at this point in time, so.
Okay.
Yeah. I do have one on the weekend at the end of July, but anyway.
I've got no more travel coming. Oh, wait, yes, I do.
Anyway, if you do want to contact the show, there's many avenues to do so. Our website is www.grimdarkpodcast.com. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/grimdarkpodcast. Our Google Plus page is plus.google.com/+grimdarkpodcast. We tweet through @grimdarkpodcast. Our email is show@grimdarkpodcast.com. So, 84, our next episode, will be a Black Crusade episode. I would like to talk about 8th edition in Black Crusade. You know, I think that, you know, that things are going swimmingly for Chaos Forces.
Yes.
In the 8th edition, so everything is turning up, everything's coming out Milhouse for...
Oh, not entirely, but we can get to that.
That's it, yeah. And I do also want to review 48th edition, once we've had a chance to play it, haven't played too, but other parts of the show will get filled out between now and then. We hope that you will join us once more.
Yep.
Mike, after a long hiatus, thank you for finding the time, finding that we could both get together, and it's not just you, it's me as well. I'll be honest, when I went to America recently, I even took my microphone thinking, you know, screw it, I'm just going to record an episode on my own, and Mike can join for the next one, but then I literally was leaving work, going back to the hotel, and working until I went to bed. So, no rest for the wicked, unfortunately, for me.
Yeah.
I've put my hand up for too many extra jobs at work, and so they're making me earn my pay for once.
Yeah. But screw that.
We hope you'll join us again next time when we get around to it, and thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you soon.
This podcast is not endorsed by or affiliated with Games Workshop or Fantasy Flight Games. Warhammer 40,000, Dark Heresy, Rogue Trader, Death Watch, Black Crusade, Only War, Eternal Crusade, and all associated properties are trademark and or copyright of Games Workshop Limited. Fantasy Flight Games is a trademark of Fantasy Flight Publishing Inc. All other materials are trademark and or copyright of their respective owners. All original content is copyright of the Grimdark Podcast. All rights are reserved by their respective owners. Our theme music comes from Mevio's Medicali, music.mevio.com.